wants to skunk up my tree.
Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is poet and attorney, Karen Poppy, and we're talking about her new collection of her poetry, Diving at the Lip of the Water. Karen, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mark. Thank you for having me on your show.
This is your first book, correct? But you've actually had other stuff published. You've had chapbooks before.
Right. So this is my first full-length collection, and then there are the three chapbooks, and they're thinner books. But
well, I wanted to ask you, because I've actually talked to other poets, and I've never asked them this before. What is there a technical definition for chapbook?
So it's normally a thinner volume of poetry, usually under 45 pages. Sometimes it edges up to there, but normally it's just shorter. It's a technicality. It's still a book, but it's a very thin book.
Now, are those still published, or are they sort of put together by sort of artisans? I always envision chapbooks as being this sort of artisanal project.
The ones that I have are still published and available on my website, KarenPoppy.com. On the first page is a list of all of my book publications, including my first full-length collection, Diving at the Lip of the Water, and then my three chapbooks with links. But you're right. Traditionally, chapbooks were handmade.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Just so beautiful. I would love to participate, collaborate in a project like that.
Well, talk to me about the poems in Diving at the Lip of the Water. Most of these, if I remember reading right, have appeared in other sources, correct?
They have, and that's on my website, too.
Well, it's also in the beginning of the book. It's in the beginning of the book, too.
Yes, that is true, too. I have a whole page on my website dedicated to where I've published before, and then at the beginning of my book, I have a list of the poems that were published previously and where they were published.
Cool. Did you write any specific for this collection?
I did not think of it that way. No, the collection just came together organically. And
so in your garden?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. In my garden, which I do. I'm sitting actually right near my back door, which has my organic garden.
See?
I do garden.
I wasn't
you're
just
right.
being a wise guy. Talk to me about organizing this then. Now, these poems were originally not written to go together. So talk to me about how you organize these.
They weren't originally written to go together, but they all ended up telling a story. And when I was writing them, a lot of them I said, oh, this isn't really about me. Of course it was about me. And I had to cop to that later. But it's a story. It's a narrative arc. I learned in the aftermath of writing the poems that was what was happening. And some of the poems actually took the shape of what I was writing. For example, my poem Badass Mermaid.
Yep.
That's in
I love that poem.
The water.
I love
Thank
that.
Thank you.
I even just love the title. It's a great idea.
Thank you. Yeah, it was part of a larger work that I'm still doing, a novel about open water long distance swimming, and somehow this poem took the shape of a mermaid. I didn't know this when I was writing it. I didn't know
it. Oh, come on!
No, I promise you, it's eerie. It is super strange. But right now I'm writing a novel, and one of the characters, you're going to love this as a birder, is a falcon. And I was told
Wait a minute, I thought you wrote to me that one of the characters that's narrating it is a cat.
That is true. There is a cat.
Are there humans in this book?
There are some humans, but it's largely overrun by animals, populated by animals. And I've come to realize as I'm about 20,000 words to done, which means I'm almost there, I'm in the home stretch, this novel is shaped like a falcon. I swear to God, it has a little head, the larger body, a little wider. The middle chapters are purposefully longer. And then it tapers as the action quickens.
Oh, my God.
To the, basically, the tail part of the bird. It's there. I'm just like, oh, my goodness. And then, you know, I'll probably print the thing out and it'll look like a cat. And I'll be like, no, I thought it was a falcon, but it's a cat. There's the tail.
Aren't you glad you're not doing an octopus?
I know, that would be a project. I mean, but somehow it would happen because these things do. The creative mind is limitless, apparently.
Getting back to this collection, Diving at the Lip of the Water, do you envision people then reading this from beginning to end instead of just dipping into it?
I think that a reader can do either. There is a term for this, and I don't recall the term, but people who read books and magazines backwards. And I do this. I love picking a magazine and starting at the back. Yes. And
Karen,
if somebody does that with my book, I would be delighted.
How long have you been doing this?
Reading magazines.
This conversation's
backwards.
Going way out of, we're doing an octopus conversation right now.
I guess we are.
So how long have you been reading things backwards? Now, you're not talking about word for word backwards. You're just talking about the page. Is that so you're cheating at mystery novels or something?
Exactly. I want to find out who done it before anyone else, before I even look at the clues. I don't do it with mystery novels too much. I may peek at the end, but I won't tell.
Oh, my God. Well, tell yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I may tell myself. I may admit to it if I do that. But normally I don't. It's normally with magazines that I do that. Sometimes with other books, I will leaf backwards to start, nonfiction particularly. I do, though, love mystery novels. The one that I'm writing right now, it is a cozy murder mystery with a cat. And then as far as my favorite novelist, it's Ruth Rendell.
Mm.
And she was also writing when she was alive as Barbara Vine. And those books are all masterworks. I don't know. It's like something to try to be one day. You know, like if I could write like her, I would feel like I've completed
Oh, that's interesting.
Something.
What is it about her works that appeals to you?
I love that they're not only literary masterworks, they are psychological inquiries.
Huh.
So she delves into not just the whodunit, she created the whydunit.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, I can definitely understand why you're interested in that. Let's talk about this collection. Let's talk about, first of all, the title, Diving at the Lip of the Water. It really conjures up all sorts of visions. As a matter of fact, I was just about to watch the movie Infinity Pool, which is a very weird movie. And I thought about, you know, diving at the edge of the pool means you're diving out into space in the case of an infinity pool. Talk to me where that title came from.
So the title actually came from a book by Judy Gron. She's the author and poet who wrote the blurb for the front of my book, Paradox and Power. She was really kind to provide that to me. And she wrote a book titled She Who. In that book, she has Diving at the Lip of the Water. And in my title poem, I title it and the book Diving at the Lip of the Water. So there's definitely, it's not just an original work. I stand on the shoulders of those before me very clearly. And I really respect and admire the work of those poets who have come before me.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are still here, and so I've been able to show my gratitude and say thank you.
Could you read a poem right now? I'd like to try to get you to read two poems for the show, but could you read one right now?
Sure, of course. Since we were talking about birds and birding a little earlier,
Brewer's Blackbird?
Yes, I'll read Brewer's Blackbird for the audience. Brewer's Blackbird. Preening feathers to clean, black, sleek sheen of purple and green, his own bold colors and oil slick. Subtle, regal, owner of the scene, male of the species. His yellow eye stares at me, handsome and pale, like my grandfather's. And oh, I can see why my grandmother fell so in love, so fast. He too strutted, looked dangerous. We'll have to marry soon. You're testing my virginity. Yes, she actually said that at age 18, 1940. They married and his number came up, drafted by the Army. World War II tested them both. My grandfather shot through the face and almost died. Pale eyes startling, skin slack on one side. My grandmother, her eyes red every day. A baby. After the war, thank God, another on the way. My father, same eyes. I also have that color. At the moment, I match here eye to eye with Brewer's Blackbird. Pale yellow that some call piercing green. This bird, one of his female offspring. Females, also medium in size, but plain, brown, and thin. Darkest on wing and tail, with a dark eye, although some have pale. Are these female birds inwardly like me? Ungendered, inside, neither male nor female. Pale yellow eye, an outward sign, a signal.
I really love that poem.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is poet and attorney Karen Poppy, and we're talking about her new collection of poetry, Diving at the Lip of the Water. And we just heard Brewer's Blackbird, which, by the way, for people who don't know on the East Coast, that's the common blackbird that's on the western half of North America. And they do have that really strange eye that sticks out like crazy. Your grandmother figures in several of your poems. Talk to me about your relationship with your grandmother.
She does, and she helped to raise me. My paternal grandmother, Esther, my other grandmother, my maternal grandmother, Myrna, she also figures in my poems in this collection. So they both come into it, and I also have in here, obviously, my paternal grandfather who mm-hmm. helped to raise me, too. I felt like something was missing, and I realized, oh, my goodness, for all of his heroism, he was a hero to me, I didn't put in my maternal grandfather, and I felt that omission. You know, I really felt it. And so I was able to honor him recently with a memoir piece that was recently published in a magazine. I believe it's called The Memoirist. And I was able to detail how he basically, my maternal grandfather, stepped in and made sure that I was able to go to college.
Wow.
And keep going to college. Wow. So I love being able to honor people, the poets, the writers who've come before, and then also my own family, my family who's helped me.
There's a quote from the poem, To My Grandmother, A Letter, that I really found interesting. I can't trust people like you did. I am always looking for the lie. Is that true?
It tends to be. I tend to have trust issues.
I guess so.
But my grandmother, she did. She really trusted people. This is my maternal grandmother, Myrna. My paternal grandmother, Esther, I mean, she was a New Yorker from Brooklyn. I would say less so. She was more street smart.
Cool.
But But my maternal grandmother, Myrna, even though she was a district attorney and one of the first female attorneys, actually, she was the first female attorney, I believe, in her class, she trusted people, like, to the point where it was dangerous for her.
And that's amazing, being an attorney. You would think that being an attorney would make you less trustworthy of people.
It's true, and especially a district attorney dealing with crime. But, you know, people are complex beings, and so they just, I think that there's a separation. Well, that would never happen to me.
Do you think you'll ever trust people?
I trust some people, and okay. I do have what I think I call a spider sense now of who I can trust.
I like that. Several of your poems are very physical, very sensual, too. Is that a major theme for you? I was thinking of Oysters on the Beach, I think.
Oh, yes.
That's another poem I love by yours.
I could read that one, too, if you'd like.
Well, let's talk about it first.
Sure. I do love to delve into the sensual. I have a hard time not. I mean, we are breathing sensual beings.
Yep.
We tend to live. I mean, we do live by our senses, as all animals do. And that's our reality. And then coupled with our reality is the fact that our senses produce for us, or show us, I should say, the wonder of our existence.
Wow.
The absolute wonder.
I got to ask you, whenever I talk with an artist, I'm always interested in the artist's evolution. So talk to me about you and poetry. Were you always writing poetry, like as a young person?
I'm much younger person. Old. I can talk to you about being old.
You're so not old. I'm old. I know. I'm ancient. Like, I have trilobites on my skin. So were you writing poetry as a young child?
I'm going to have to, first of all, get some sort of a t-shirt that says effing not old and wear it when I drop my son off to school, because, but, I started not writing, but composing poetry with the help of my mom before I was able to write. I was about 3 years old and I wanted to write a poem about a nightingale.
Whoa, wait a minute. How old were you?
Like three. And
it was actually
a kind of precursor too. Don't worry. She put little musical notes next to it. I knew what a nightingale was from my mother reading to me. She read to me every night. Family members, aunt Nancy, who just recently passed away, she used to read to me a book about a little lamb. And so family members were pretty constantly reading to me.
That makes a huge difference. Thing. Yeah.
It really does. Read
You're really lucky that that happened to you.
Your grandkids, yep, your other family members, your young ones, because it will carry them through their lives.
That's absolutely right. People need to do that a lot. And not only that, it encourages the young person to read themselves.
That's right. It really does.
So when did you start writing poetry seriously, like for publication?
I started writing seriously at probably around the age of 11 or 12 in middle school. I was introduced to a poet that I'm sure that you know of. You definitely know her daughter. Sylvia Plath
is a
great inspiration to me when I was young, so much so that I found out that she went to Smith College. And I said, oh my gosh, she went to Smith College. I am going to go to Smith College.
I think you're not alone in that.
No one thought I could. I had some difficulties growing up. My grades were okay, but there were other things that weren't so wonderful in my family situation. But like I said, my grandfather, he stepped in. He set up a college fund for me when my parents tried to pull me out of college. He reminded them, wait, no, I hold the purse strings here, and she's staying. So he really saved me. The back to, I guess, the middle school experience and learning through the writing of Sylvia Plath. I started with actually her prose work, The Bell Jar, her novel, and then I moved through her poetry. And we learn by emulation, by copying. And I did that at first, and then you become your own cat. Eventually, you become your own cat.
Did you say your own cat?
Yes.
Explain that.
You become your own type of writer. You may at first adopt the styles of others, and they become part of your writer's genetic code, if you will.
Got it.
But then eventually you become yourself. You become your own individual as an artist and creator.
I want you to read another poem because we're going to rapidly run out of time. So could I impose on you to read another poem?
Of course. Let me read. I just said Oysters on the Beach. I'll read that one.
Okay.
Oysters on the Beach. Salted raw and delicious. Oysters on the beach. Ocean air, the way I see you. The way I want to kiss you. Bring you into harvest. Your hair whips in the wind. Your knees draw up and you pose. There's so much you make me feel. Water swirls below, wilds itself on rocks. I step back as if you were a photograph. Withdraw from you, your soft, open delicacy.
Now, I want to, before we run out of time, I want to talk about, in the intro to this show and the outro too, we heard a musical piece by the composer Myron Silverstein, sung by Laura Strickling from the album 40 at 40. Talk to me about that, because she was singing one of your poems.
She was singing Prometheus's Monster, which starts out, there's a cat called Prometheus who wants to skunk up my tree.
Wait, how did you get involved in this? Because that's a totally strange project to hear one of your poems sung like that.
I know, it's a strange project and one that's brought me so much joy. Being a librettist, it's not something I ever thought, oh, I'm going to be a librettist.
Well, who ever thinks like, you know, when I grew
people do.
I want to be a librettist. As a matter of fact, I've never interviewed anybody in like 30 years that says, I want to be a librettist. What does that entail?
I want you to find that person, Mark.
I haven't. What does that entail?
So basically, I write the lyrics for the musical pieces.
Wow.
In this case, it's a poem of mine, and that's actually how it's been so far. I've written these poems that are then set to music, are often art song for soprano or other voices, and more recently, choral works too, which is super exciting. I'm in collaboration on more of those as we speak. So I've also written a full-length opera libretto and looking for a second composer for that. If any of your listeners tend to love opera, know an opera composer, and want to connect, please. I have one composer who is composing the more traditional music for the opera, which is set in the Baroque musical period. But we need a second composer. It's a full-length opera, so a lot of work is needed there.
How did you get started in this? And did you know Laura Strickling?
I did not, and I didn't know Myron Silverstein either. What happened was I didn't think this growing up, but I thought, I want to be a librettist. I want to write song lyrics.
Okay, so you didn't use the word librettist, though, did you?
No, I just said songwriter.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So, So I joined a group on Facebook, which is the way I connect with a lot of people, actually, on social media, for better or for worse. And I think for better, I think that it's opened up so much for creative people. So I joined a group of composers and writers, just thinking, oh, I'll see what's out there. And pretty immediately, I connected with Myron Silverstein, and we got started on a project. It's a song cycle of four art songs for soprano, and it's called Any Moment Lonely.
Is that going to be released in some form, hopefully later?
So I hope so. I mean, the one song, Prometheus is Monster, that's the one that's on the album by Laura Strickling, 40 at 40. And then there are three other songs on there as well. So I'm hoping that those will premiere soon. I've put out my feelers for that, as has Myron.
That's really exciting. I think that's really interesting. That whole process is going to be different in some ways from writing poetry alone.
It is.
But you know what, Karen? We're out of time.
Oh, no problem.
No, I'm sorry. I just looked over the clock and I realized we've run out of time and we have so much more that we can talk about. My guest tonight is poet and attorney and librettist, Karen Poppy. And we've been talking about her new collection of poetry. It's really interesting and wonderful. Diving at the Lip of the Water. Karen, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me on, Mark.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.
Called Prometheus, who wants to skunk up my tree?